Good morning. I think as you can see, this is a very exciting time for practitioners working in the field addressing children's exposure to violence. One, with the new NATSCEV that Dr. Finkelhor just spoke about, but also Attorney General Holder. This is one of his passions and has devoted a lot of interest and support, not only in funding, but awareness about the issue as well. And NATSCEV has really started to have practitioners think differently about how are we really going to best serve these children, and really sets the stage of almost a starting point of where we need to begin to best reach these children. And Dr. Dumont's work tells us a little bit, it gives us some of the elements that we need to apply in best serving these children. So how do we apply this research locally? Well, both NIJ and the Department of Health and Human Services have outlined, starting with a needs assessment, to go to the local community and figure out what is already in place to begin to both plan and develop services and interventions and treatment programs and follow-up services for kids exposed to violence. The final reports of both NIJ and Department of Health and Human Services report the community should make children exposed to violence a priority and identify the needs of these children, services that are in the community for these children, the availability and accessibility of services, and gaps in services. And they specifically talked about services, but I would include interventions, and we're going to talk a little bit more about what we mean by interventions, and then implement a strategic plan to based on these findings. So really a blueprint of how do we go forward in each local community of best identifying and treating and preventing children's exposure to violence. So the Safe Starts demonstration sites came up with several key elements in terms of responding to children's exposure to violence, and I'm going to go through them today. It's early detection and identification, training and community outreach, protocols, policies, and procedures, awareness of services, evidence-based interventions, comprehensive and coordinated responses, staff support and supervision, and evaluation. So let's first start with early detection. We really need to have better case tracking in regards to children's exposure to violence. You know, we have NATSCEV, which is on a federal sample or national sample, but we need to, if we're going to start working in local communities, we have to try and better understand what is going on in that local community in terms of children's exposure to violence. So we want to first see, is there any published local data that could be from you know, organizations focusing. Now, again, because as Dr. Finkelhor said, really NATSCEV is the first time looking at a broad range of children's exposure to violence. So unfortunately, we're going to have to piece apart, you know, what are the child welfare statistics? What are the domestic violence rates? And we want to see if there's any research studies in our local communities that are implementing the self-reports that Dr. Finkelhor spoke about. What are our community agencies doing? Are they case tracking? Are they identifying it? Even if it's in their intake or case files, how can we best get that information to better understand what's going on? Law enforcement records. Now, this gets a little trickier when talking about children's exposure. Law enforcement does a very good job, you know, of documenting domestic violence, sexual assault, homicides. But many communities don't have any information about whether children were involved, whether they were present, or their proximity to that violence. Are there any databases? Again, we have databases spread out by types of violence, but one is the NCA track, which has for child advocacy centers to look at children who have come into a child advocacy center where there's been an allegation of child maltreatment or mostly child abuse, and then, you know, looking at it to see if there are other types of violence as well. and co-occurrence information, particularly around domestic violence and child maltreatment. Many states have now started implementing co-occurrence protocols, while child welfare agencies are now screening and identifying children exposed to domestic violence. We need to better understand the numbers there. What are they finding? How many cases are they seeing? So then we move to identification assessment, and who should be screening for this? Well, obviously key professionals involved in children's lives, healthcare providers, particularly pediatric providers, schools, preschools, Head Starts. Dr. Finkelhorst spoke about that schools, you know, in middle school and high school, that's a peak period for polyvictimization. Then we need to, train schools to better be identifying these children, particularly at those time periods. Daycares, after-school programs, youth programs, police, faith-based organizations, child welfare, and juvenile justice systems. So wherever you would normally think about where you find children, this is where we need to work to better have them identifying and assessing for children's exposure to violence. Dr. Dumont spoke about how important, you know, prenatal and newborn care is in terms of screening and identifying for children exposed to violence. Holden in 2003 was talking specifically about children's exposure to domestic violence, but did state that exposure prenatally is a form of exposure. So we need to start thinking about that as well as a type of exposure. And as Dr. Dumont talked about, screen pregnant women in a community rather than only new mothers. This again means OBGYNs, midwives, prenatal and newborn home visitors. And we're not only talking about the home visitors that Dr. Dumont's program employees, but also, I've been involved with trainings for doulas, for lactation consultants, you know, people who are getting into the home when this violence may already be occurring. As Dr. Finkelhorst mentioned, poly victims of children exposure to violence are more likely to have other life adversities. So therefore, screening should also be done by professionals working to address these adversities, such as those working in unemployment, welfare. Many community agencies work to address economic hardships, substance abuse providers, mental health agencies, and then those addressing accidents and illnesses, first responders, emergency rooms, but also, again, to make a coordinated approach, if you're a domestic violence program addressing that injury, that trauma, also to be screening for the other forms of violence as well. So what do we want to screen for? I think, again, Dr. Winkelhorst did a wonderful job explaining this broader range of exposure categories. And again, what is the child's proximity to the violence? Where are they? Were they victimized? Did they hear about it? Did they know about it? And again, as Dr. Finkelhorst talked about the wide developmental spectrum, we need to know children of all ages, what their exposure has been. The single type of exposure and the frequency, but again, the polyvictimization, the co-occurrence, and not just of the types we're used to doing, putting together domestic violence and child maltreatment, but all the other types that NATSCIV talks about to really be assessing better for those. The past year exposure and the lifetime exposure, I think from a practitioner standpoint, lifetime exposure is important. Because particularly I work with healthcare providers and pediatric providers, and when they're screening for domestic violence, they often will tell me, well, it was in the past. So I don't worry about it. I didn't ask about it. But oftentimes we know that maybe the violence itself is not currently occurring, but we have custody battles, we have harassment, we have stalking, so there are other things we need to know about. We want to know the impact of exposure on the child and the family, so emotionally, trauma, anxiety, depression, for both the child and the caregiver, behavioral symptoms. Socially, many of these children, in my experience, have very few friendships, and if they do, they're very superficial friendships, so we want to get a better understanding of their social skills. Physically and developmentally, how are they doing? And it's also been shown that children's exposure to violence impacts the attachment relationship with the caregiver. So we want to know, you know, how that relationship has been impacted. We want to know about the other adversities going on for the family. But we also want to try and take a strengths-based perspective as well and look at the protective factors and the resiliency both in the child and in the family. So how to screen. I think it was talked about, you know, the importance of speaking with parents and caretakers directly, children directly. I do assess children as young as six and older. Dr. Finkelhor mentioned there are common victimizations and peak risk periods for different age groups. So we want to make sure if we have a child in that age group that we're specifically asking about that type of exposure. We need to have protocols and procedures on how to assess and respond. It's really unfair to practitioners to just say to them, screen. We need to tell them how to do it, what to do if they find it, because most of them, and rightfully so, feel they're opening a Pandora's box and have a lot of concern about if they get a positive, what do I do with it? We need to have cross-agency policies. So, you know, it wouldn't be very helpful to have this agency doing this procedure and policy and this one doing that. We need to try and come together and have a cross-agency coordinated community response in how we address it. We need to give practitioners screening questionnaires and tools that ask about exposure to violence but also are asking about the impact. And these assessments need to be culturally, linguistically, and age appropriate. There are some measures out there. There are that are not. We need to either develop them or implement ones that address this. And we really do need more valid and reliable screening tools. There's been some studies in the healthcare field, but again, talking about specific types of violence, much fewer around children's exposure to violence. We really need to come up with some that address that, but also, you know, is a healthcare screening tool, should that be the same that we use in a preschool or a Head Start? Probably not. So again, we can't just tell people to screen. We need to train them on how to do this, and we need to begin by talking about what are the types of violence that are out there, including this new broad definition of children's exposure to violence. We need to tell them about the local data around children's exposure to violence because most people don't realize it, at least don't know it from the broad definition that Natskev is talking about. We need to provide them with identification and assessment strategies. And Dr. Finkelhor talks about multi-victimization assessment. You know, child welfare agencies are obviously asking about one type of children's exposure, but may not be asking about the broad range. We need to be really thinking about this from a multi-victimization, a poly-victimization perspective. And again, back to coordination, we need coordination of trainings. Practitioners tell me all the time, you know, that there's the domestic violence training here, and then there's the sexual assault training there, and then 3 years later I took this, and there may be a component here and there on children. We really need to have a better, you know, a more coordinated, comprehensive training that someone can take that covers this broad range of children's exposure to violence. And training has to include referral resources, again, to have people screen, identify, to be able to begin to address this. They need to feel there's somebody who can pick it up if they identify it. Similarly, we need more standardized and evaluated trainings for children exposed to violence. There are many, many trainings throughout the country, again, on different types of violence, some on children's exposure to violence, but very few have been standardized or evaluated. So not only are we reinventing the wheel, we don't really know what works. We need, again, trainings for different settings. A lot of times we do a one-size-fits-all and just open it up to the community, but you know, a training for a child welfare worker is going to be very different, again, than a preschool worker or a law enforcement personnel. I say training for parents, but we need to also be
thinking about how we talk to parents about this information, how they can identify. We know that whether their own child's experiencing it or the friends of their children, we need to include them in thinking about how we identify and screen. We need to have a greater understanding of how information is best received. It's been started to talk about in, again, healthcare settings that the big lecture with, 200 people is not the best way to get the information across, that it needs to be in smaller formats. But that's a lot of that is anecdotally. We need more research of what works best, what type of training works best for people to really be able to receive the information. Do we do role plays? Do we do it in a lecture format? Do we show videos? What works best? And there have been studies that have shown that trainings for violence, a lot of this is around domestic violence and sexual assault, but that there is a change in knowledge and attitudes over time, but very little change in practice. So while it's good that we're changing knowledge and attitudes, our real goal is to change practice, is to have people really be screening for this. So we have to think about how do we do these trainings where really people do change how they're screening. Okay, I want to just move to interventions. So interventions should also be evidence-based, and for a lot of providers, this sometimes makes them nervous. There are evidence-based interventions out there for children's exposure to violence, and there are also a lot of theories that you can base interventions on, to explain why you're using a particular intervention. Should have an evaluation component, like Dr. Dumont's work. It really is important to show that what you're doing works. We have a lot of different wonderful programs going on that we know very little about if they're effective, and few people know about it. We really need to have more of a research component. Intervention should have a clear goal, and that goal should be to prevent or reduce the impact of the exposure. And that seems like a simple statement, and of course, but a lot of times we get these families, they're in crisis, and we just implement a program without really thinking of what is the larger goal. We want to focus on prevention and treatment. There's, I think, been more focus on treatment, but we need to really begin to think about implementing programs focusing on prevention. We also need to have programs that address the individual, but also the family, community, and also systems, changing the way both systems address and respond to children's exposure to violence. Again, a coordinated approach. Again, Dr. Finkler talked about, with the MAP, we have the child abuse intervention here, the exposure to domestic violence here, and we're not working together. And especially given the polyvictimization, we're really doing children a disservice. And interventions as well should be culturally, linguistically, and age-appropriate. Both Dr. Finkelhorn and Dr. Dumont talk about, addressing adversities, that was shown to the families have a lot of adversities, and Dr. Dumont's work showed that addressing these adversities really helps. So interventions need to do that. They need to have community input. I used to work at a healthcare setting, and people in the community used to call hospital personnel the clipboard people, that we would come, we would ask them a lot of questions, and then we would tell them the programs that they needed in their community. We need to have their input about what they feel they need, what's going on. And these programs should be situated directly in the community with a dedicated leader and staff. They need to be accessible and available. If they're not and only certain people are able to get there, can we really say that it's a program that benefits many, or is it only benefiting the people that are able to somehow get to the service? It should have staff support and supervision, and again, begin as early as possible in the child's life, including the prenatal period. So questions we have in regard to the field, again, there are many. So NATSCEV is a great first start about, better understanding what's going on for these children, but we need to know what are the long-term effects of children's exposure to violence on these children.
And is the impact different, and should we be having different interventions for the different types of children exposure to violence? You know, should a bullying program be very different than an exposure to domestic violence program? What do we do? Do we separate kids by, you know, if they've had an individual episode of one type of violence or repeated exposure? And again, those poly victims, what do we do about them? And again, is the impact different for these children? What about child witnesses as opposed to direct victims? Can we serve them together? Should we be planning things differently for them? And how should the interventions for poly victimization be designed? I think NATSCEV really highlights the importance that if most of these kids or a lot of these kids have had multiple victimizations, well, then we really need to be designing interventions for that, and how do we do that? A big question in the field is, are interventions effective when the child is still living with the violence? This is, people feel strongly on either side, particularly, again, around domestic violence. You know, should we be serving kids when they're still living in the home with the violence, or do we need to say, no, it's not going to be effective, we need to wait until the family is not living with the violence? And for these evidence-based interventions, are outcomes improved over time? I think it's wonderful Dr. DeMont's study when the children turn 7. We need more studies like that that show what is happening to these kids over time. Again, how accessible and available are these interventions? What are the barriers, and how can we overcome them? Many practitioners say there are a lot of barriers to reaching interventions: waiting lists, transportation, not culturally or linguistically appropriate. What do we do about that? How can we address that? And then, does that make a difference for the type of interventions that have been considered evidence-based? Now that we've broadened the definition of children's exposure to violence, we have many different abusers. We now have sibling abusers, we have school, peer abusers, we have parents, we have adults. So that means we have many abusers. What do we do for them? Do we create interventions for them? Is it worthwhile? Is there a way to prevent it? And then which intervention should we use and at what time? We have a lot of interventions focused on the child, on the family, on the school, community systems. Do we do them together? Do we do them one at a time? Which ones? We need to have more public awareness and resource materials, again, about the broad definition of children's exposure to violence. I think there is... the recent case in Massachusetts of bullying has made bullying, I think, take on a greater role, but most people would not include that in the definition of children's exposure to violence. So we need to really be better about publicizing that. The NATSCEV data we need to be better about getting out there, as well as local CEV data. We need to tell people, get out there more about the real impact of this violence on children. We need to have people know that there are both prevention programs and treatment services. We also need to find a way to disseminate best practices. What has been shown to work in the field? Again, many practitioners and providers are not aware of that. Referral procedures, how do people get help? Again, both if you're as a family, how do I get help if this is going on for me, as well as providers if you're working with a family? As I said, many states have implemented policies, particularly in child welfare agencies, where they're addressing the co-occurrence of domestic violence and child maltreatment, and they're not removing if there has been a case of domestic violence. We need to get that word out there to families that if they disclose domestic violence, their children, there's a new way of responding to the family. We need a greater distribution of research and knowledge in the field. We need more coordinated efforts around research and practice. Again, there in many areas, there isn't really a good connection. As I said, we need more coordinated efforts around the different types of violence and exposure, and not be working separately. Again, I love that map, not be working in our different countries.
We need to have a strategic plan, not only for local communities, but as a country. Where are we going? What are we trying to accomplish in regards to children exposure to violence? How are we going to get there? What are the ways we're going to implement?
Because the goal, right, is to replicate programs,
policies, and interventions that have shown to be effective in preventing and lessening children's exposure to violence across the U.S. Thank you.